Look at that robe. He's sexy and he knows it. Oh, everyone's gonna go and get f***ing robes. Do I have to go get a f***ing robe? F*** you f***ing robe rubes. Are you not f***ing recording?
I mean, I guess I am now.
We are recording f***ing. Here we go.
Let's do this.
Welcome, dear listener, to the QQCast. Today's Thursday, May 9th, 2024. We're your hosts, Thunderpod, Zach Mayer, and Trey Esmond. Where's Rumi?
Dead to us forever.
As is tradition on the QQCast. Trey says nothing. He's like, I don't know. I plead the fifth. I will not tell you where Rumi's body is, where I buried it.
I'm not going to incriminate myself. Yeah.
Just wait till you get outside of your trial and start talking to the press, and then incriminate yourself. Absolutely.
Oh,
that's what I hear the new fashion trend is.
Twist ending, he was Ruli all along.
big programmer, strong programmer, comes up to me, tears in his eyes, says, Mr. Technical Lead, you do the best architecture. Shut up, and this, dear listener, is Quest 327. What stuck the landing? All right, gentlemen, I'm super excited about this. This came up at a dinner party I was at. What are things, any media, I'm going to be talking about games and movies for the most part, that truly stuck the landing? As in, this ending is sublime. It is maybe something that recontextualizes the content before it. It ties everything up in just a beautiful bow. It goes above and beyond your expectations. So this is not a good ending. There are many good endings. This is a fucking great ending. This is one of the rare occasions where I prepped you guys in advance, so I expect good answers, good thoughtful answers. I'm looking at Zach's eyes. He has nothing back there, as per usual.
It's nothing behind these eyes.
Ugh. So I want to...
Just pure innocence.
And lies and treachery.
These dead eyes, these sad pools of darkness.
These dull cow eyes.
So I wanted to start off with... an example of something that, you know, is like really good, but not a great, or a couple examples of like, this is really good, but it's not great. It's not transcendent, right? I never shut the fuck up about Aliens or Mad Max Fury Road. They're both great endings. They don't transcend shit. I also like the example of Jurassic Park. It is a damn near perfect movie. Every fucking frame of that movie is beautiful and perfect and has aged like a fine goddamn wine. But I'm not going to tell you that the ending is amazing. It's a good ending. It wraps up nice. But it's not, again, transcendent. So this is above and beyond. So the first thing I'm going to talk about, I'm going to go first, because I gave you guys this example, and I think it is a phenomenal example of what we're talking about here. And that is Christopher Nolan's film debut of Memento. That fucking movie, that ending is so badass. Talk about recontextualizing the whole film. Everything you've seen is now upside down on its head because of the last 5 minutes. Gentlemen, I assume you've both seen Memento.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
I've heard of it.
Damn you. Well, what did you think of the movie?
That's the movie with the guy, and he's got all the crazy shit on his arms.
He's gonna kill the man. Does he kill the man?
Does he?
I like the Memento episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You guys remember that?
No, that's a thing. No.
Do you remember the character Pimento?
No, I didn't watch him,
but he's well, anyway, he's this he's this Jesus.
A spy
Christ.
Came out of the dark background and tried to kill Trey on Mike.
I think she's dead now.
It's like a horror movie, Jesus Christ.
Oh well. So anyway.
what was I talking about?
So before
about?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine became a horror film.
Well, the guy is this crazy detective. He has this wild backstory. He was undercover for way too long and went more than a little crazy.
The Departed?
At one point, they have this episode. The whole plot is that he's got like retrograde amnesia and short-term memory loss. His memory just keeps resetting, like in Memento.
Yeah.
And the guy, what's his name? Adam Sandberg? Andy Sandberg.
Andy Sandberg.
Yeah. Lonely Island.
Andy Sandberg. Lonely Island guy is being like, oh, you've got the short-term memory resetting, like in Memento. And he's like, what? I've never seen Memento. How have you never seen Memento? I was like, oh, it's like in Finding Dory. He's got Finding Dory disease.
Or if you...
Oh, now that makes sense. I understand immediately what's going on.
That's good.
And for those of you who didn't abuse AVN like I did, yeah. You know, it'd be cool, guys, if we experienced the same 5 minutes all night long.
Wait, we're going to watch Run,
what's
Lola,
that,
Run?
What's that, ambient walrus? I should throw my keys into the bushes.
Let's go driving.
So yeah, I do want to acknowledge that I think most Christopher Nolan movies have great endings, but I think Memento is the only one that is, again, truly transcendent. I think someone might try to argue for Inception. I think it's a good ending. I don't.
Nah, they're wrong.
Well,
does it fold out or not? Who cares? I don't care.
It was fine. Like, yeah.
If you're gonna pull a trick like that, do this whole thing, you have to make me care about it. I wasn't quite there yet. I don't know.
So sad. So sad.
Well, you know, that's not my fault. I paid for entertainment. That was not entertainment.
And we got oh my god, I can't think of his name. We got Leonardo DiCaprio falling into a bathtub in slow motion. Literally Zack Snyder's wet dream, but he could never sign DiCaprio. Boom.
Oh, harsh.
All right, gentlemen, who's got the next one? Who's got the transcendent ending?
All right, so I've got one for y'all. You tub-slurping grave fuckers, Saltburn.
I don't even know what that is.
What?
Oh, no, I haven't thought about Saltburn in a long time.
It, so you've seen it. Okay, good. The movie, I don't know. Are we doing spoilers? How are we doing spoilers?
Yeah,
this?
Just go ahead. We're not going to have this spoilers. Spoilers.
Okay, great.
When did Saltburn come out? That was like
2023,
right?
Yeah, it was last year.
Wait.
Oh, wow.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I thought it was much older.
A lot of your life happened since then.
Produced by Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
So it's a very talented Mr. Ripley kind of movie where you got this fish out of water story, high society, it's kind of a drama, and you're wondering what's kind of going on and where are we going with this, and then people just start dying. But it's not like that's not the interest in the film. It's still about the interpersonal relationships. You kind of just like, keep ignoring it for a while. You're like, I don't know, that guy, who worries about him? And the ending sequence, though, it comes back around to, and Tom, I'm sorry, I'm going to just ruin this for you. Because
all right, hold on. Hang on, earplugs going out.
Yeah, earmuffs. Because it's the protagonist, and he has killed everyone. And the ending sequence of him running naked, like dick out flopping in the wind, to the song "Murder on the Dance Floor," all-time
banger.
Give me
like a hand signal just, when I can put fucking earplugs.
It just brought me to completion. It really got me where I needed to be, and I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't even really, you know, at full power at that point, and it was amazing. Totally
this is
incredible.
Cruelty. You guys are having fun without me. I can see you having fun and smiling and laughing. Yay. All right. Come back inside.
Good luck editing this.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I hear this movie's really good.
You should see it. You should see it like alone at night, preferably.
Oh, Jesus, fuck. Well, Zach, then you second the notion to start a commotion?
Yeah, no. I buy that. It was... I don't know. I think I watched it when I was like half paying attention and then got kind of sucked in about midway through. But
God damn it.
But then I got sucked off at the end.
Oh,
so.
Buddy.
I'm sorry. It was right there.
So, yeah, I don't know anything about this. Definitely an indie film here. Only grossed like 20 million. But I don't say that as a bad thing. You know, talking about this, like the horror movie kind of thing that like, oh man, what's going on? People are dying. I don't know. For some reason, you guys made me think of The Menu, which again, I wouldn't say is transcendent, but great ending.
Not familiar, unfortunately. Sorry.
Oh, there's a good one for you. Ralph Fiennes is the main character. It's got Anya Taylor-Joy.
I will watch those two doing whatever.
Yeah,
really.
John Leguizamo. The Menu. It's on Netflix. It's great. Totally great. You should absolutely watch it.
All right.
Yeah, really good ending. Again, I'm not going to put it in this tier, but really good.
I always like it when there's like a tonal shift, right? Where you're like, I thought I was watching one kind of a movie, and it's all like, ha, gotcha, bitch.
Yeah.
You're not. But not in that whole, like, you know, like it's a tweeze kind of thing. It's like, oh, yeah, no, I was actually watching a different thing, and I tricked myself. And yeah, you're kind of clever, aren't you?
The thing I'll say about The Menu, and this is not a spoiler at all, is like the whole time you're watching it, you keep wondering, is it going to take like the easy way out or the easy gag or is the easy thing going to happen? And then whatever they do, it is not like the easy thing that you expected. So it's not. witty twist everywhere. It's just like, oh man, are they going to? No, I guess they didn't do that. Oh, they're gonna totally. Oh, they didn't totally. And it's just like the whole time, it's just great. Just you'll love it.
You can always tell whenever the artists are giving themselves challenges, right? They're like, okay, well, we're gonna. Well, that would be too easy. That'd be too much of a cop out. Let's make it a little bit spicier. And what can we come up with, right?
It's good. All right, Zach, it's your turn. Come on, you bastard. Don't say Robert Frost. Right. I don't want to hear about, and that made all the difference.
Well, I mean, I could go with Citizen Kane, but Rosebud. No, I had something for this, but then I got distracted.
I got a whole list, dude, so.
I really should have taken notes. I thought I had it in my brain, but apparently not.
You sound like me at stand-up every
morning. Just when you get one, jump back in the queue. I'm not going to.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna
don't
put
wait
you on the
for
spot.
Me. It's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
Well, speaking of Citizen Kane, the third man, another great Orson Welles, actually, in this film, not directing it in this case, another great ending where it's a, you know, you got this whole mystery, this intrigue, and then we just meet the person who allegedly was killed. Sorry, spoilers. It's been 50 years. The statute of limitations is over.
No, absolutely. No, I remembered what I was going to say. Seven.
Oh, that's really
What's
good.
In the box?
Really good.
What's in the box?
Okay, so like, every time we get an Amazon package, I ask my daughter, Lyra, to go outside and get it, and we all both, Steph and I, yell, "What's in the box? What's in the box?"
Someday she'll understand this.
Someday she'll watch this movie and she'll be horrified. I'm planting seeds for the future.
I love it. I love it so much. Yeah, no, the whole time you're going through it, you're like, oh, shit, this is... I mean, it's obviously a horror movie, and it's obviously a tragedy, but you're like, oh, no, they gotta stop this guy, right? Like, they can't let him complete the set. He completes the set, and he becomes Wrath. Oh, it's so good.
Try to catch them all.
As much as I really like that movie, and I have some history with it, I'm going to put it on the borderline of this answer, but it is a really good answer. So, by the way,
it brings it so full circle. It's so satisfying.
Yeah. By the way, I also like there's a rule about Kevin Spacey movies now where you're only allowed to like them if he dies at the end. We can still like Seven. Oh man.
Oh, and LA Confidential, another great ending movie, and he dies not even at the end.
I didn't even think about LA Confidential.
Have
that
you a
Valediction really
Boyo?
Oh, I haven't watched that in so long. Yeah,
really good movie. Aged very well, mostly because it was already a period piece.
Yeah,
it was made in the 90s,
right, yeah.
So you know, it's fine.
Yeah, similar
can
to that.
Just be
I consider...
terrible, and, you know, hit the woman in the face and smoke cigarettes, and no one cares. No one cares.
Oh God in heaven. I considered I considered putting The Departed on the list because I do think The Departed is great, but I don't know that the ending is transcendent as such. Like it's really good, tie stuff up, but it's not like the twist happens like 45 minutes before the movie ends when DiCaprio gets shot in the goddamn head. But yeah, anyway, spoilers. Whoops. Sorry. Shouldn't have said that. You guys have seen The Departed.
I mean, I've heard of it.
Fuck you. Go watch that movie.
No, it's great. It's great. I like the rat at the end. I like whenever a director uses some like really obvious symbolism. Like, so we're talking like this book was assigned for your summer reading level symbolism. Let's just do that.
I just love the final quote of the movie.
Just beat me over the head with a dildo symbolism. It's great.
Oh, that was another, we're just going to tangent right and left. Trey, that was another runner-up that I didn't put on my list, but I thought a bunch about. What movie has a part where they literally say one of the mob bosses beat a guy to death with a giant rubber cock?
That was a, it was either Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. No, it was Lock, Stock, wasn't
it? It was Lock, Stock.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is Guy Ritchie. He's the only person that would put that in this movie. Like, you know, just so obviously.
Oh, and that's his first film. And I don't know, man. I'm probably biased, but I still think it's his best film. Like,
no, it
again,
is.
All
it
the
is.
Threads
well,
tie together at the end so satisfyingly. It's so good.
It's like the debut album of a rock band that you really like, and all everything else is good. So it's good. But the first one's like, you can tell they were just storing that come up for a long time. You know. Really blew the hell out of it.
Graphic,
you know,
fucking warning on this.
So
guy
many.
Up, so.
Well, dude, no, he has this movie. This film has like 10 minutes devoted to this scene. Like, he has a character sitting in a room talking about the dildo bludgeoning, and then after this long drawn out sequence, they show it.
Well, I mean, like they show like the point of view
coming over
point,
the desk, you know, and it's purpley veiny. You know, it's amazing.
Jesus.
Yeah. But it's all in context because he runs a sex toy shop as his cover business.
Yeah. It's all in service of the plot, which again, it's hard to do. Usually, these things are just sort of exposition. Yeah. In this case, it totally made sense.
That's another thing about that film is that so many movies like try to have unique and distinct characters, and it's so hard to have a cast that size where they're all unique and distinct. Like, I think that Tarantino is particularly good at doing that. But for somehow Lock, Stock, even though the main four characters all wear the same clothing and little peacoats, like, somehow every character in that movie is so distinct. And Hatchet Harry and fucking I can't remember the names. I can see their faces in my head.
Chill Winston, which I again say to my daughter all the time. Chill.
Anyway, okay, moving on. Let's see here. Next thing on my list. I got so much stuff on here. Okay, so I'm gonna go with this is a comedy, but it's also an action movie. It's got a few horror elements. I think this is the tightest script ever written in a film, hands down. This is definitely an auteur director. You have seen, I think, all of his movies, maybe not Last Night in Soho. Who is it? Pick the right answer, Trey. Come the fuck on. I'm so disappointed in you right now.
Oh, Edgar Wright.
Yay!
No,
thank
damn
you.
It. The one of his films I've never seen. Okay,
Hot,
great.
Hot Fuzz. I think Hot Fuzz is an amazing movie from start to finish. And the way that it escalates and the way that it switches genres mid-flight multiple times and how every single line of dialogue calls back to something else in the film. I just love Hot Fuzz. I think it's the tightest script ever written. And I think that the ending, you could not pull everything together better and tighter in every single syllable of every character's speech better than Hot Fuzz.
You're right. I mean, the writing, you know, crusty jugglers and all this, it's very good. But what really sells me on that movie, honestly, is the use of framing. Things are, I mean, I'm gonna just basically paraphrase every frame of painting on this one. Just the way that he does visual comedy with things coming into and leaving the frame is incredible.
Hey.
Right, just you're just being assaulted by these annoyances and pleasures, and it's great. It's something that you don't see very often. And he's the master of it. And on top of that, again, the tight writing, the incredible casting. I mean, you got James fucking Bond to be a villain in this thing, all right? Like, how do you do that?
Oh, God.
I don't have that phone number.
So good. Yeah, no
also,
notes.
Also, arguably my favorite James Bond. But
oh,
anyway.
Wow. Controversy.
So, fun fact, and maybe you can cue up a QQ Rambles.
Oh, here we go.
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about.
What are you blathering about?
So I've been going through and watching the James Bond movies from the beginning of the franchise. I just got past the 80s. Timothy Dalton has two James Bond movies. They are probably the best rated up to that point, and they are responsible for preserving the franchise after the end of the Roger Moore era. I'm convinced.
Oh, yeah.
They're also just so 80s. So 80s it hurts. It physically is painful how 80s it is. The Roger Moore one in the 70s, what was it, Live and Let Die, where he's like fighting the voodoo guy and he's like Mr. Big.
Yeah.
And it's just 70s
they
New
use
York
air,
street
airboats.
Gangs.
We're in a swamp. Yeah. It's great.
It's absolutely fucking
There's
wild.
There's a slide
it's,
whistle
that's,
when the car flips. Why? I
that
don't
is
know.
The most. That one was way earlier. But Live and Let Die is the 70s Bond movie. I think the License to Kill is the last one that Timothy Dalton did. It's 1989, but it is so fucking 80s.
Is that the one where he helps the Taliban at the end? I believe he teams up with
No,
them.
That's the one before that.
Okay.
The Mujahideen. That was I'm gonna forget all the names of the movies.
Which one
now.
Is the one where it opens with Felix Leiter dying, like at his wedding or something?
That is
Live and Let Die.
License to Kill.
Oh, okay.
No, License to Kill, yeah. That's the 1989 Timothy Dalton. Let's see, where is it? The Living Daylights is the one where he teams up with
A View to a Kill, The Living Daylights was the first one. View to a Kill was, it was a little uneven, but Living Daylights was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, and View to a Kill was pretty okay. I mean, just fine. But like, it's the last Roger Moore, and he's so tired of being there.
He got old during that. He played it so many times, but he loved playing it. Apparently, he just loved doing the role.
He did.
I salute that.
He did. He absolutely did. And there was what's his name?
What's his nuts?
Yeah, Honor Majesty's Secret Service. The
oh my God,
George Lazenby.
Lazenby.
Yeah. He only did one Bond movie. He was all right, but he did not want to do another one because it was so stressful. Like, he got into drugs.
Well, I heard my understanding was that the stardom just completely went to his head. That's why he started doing drugs, huge demands. And they were like, "Fuck off."
That's not why I do drugs.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, the way he tells it, it was stress-induced mania. But, yeah, basically.
But you can't be James Bond and be a little bitch about it, though, right? Like, anyway,
right?
Sorry.
The thing about that movie, though, is that's the one where Bond gets married, and the ending of it is such a fucking gut punch.
Oh, yeah.
I'm bringing it back. Because On Her Majesty's Secret Service has a fantastic ending to an otherwise fairly mediocre movie.
With one of the greatest sets of all time, though. They built that fucking ski lodge for real, and it is still around to this day.
Yeah. Man. The Peace Gloria.
Yeah.
Anyway, the ending to Honor Majesty's Secret Service, Bond gets married, and they drive away in their, like, 60s wedding car, you know, with the flowers and the tin cans and whatnot, and they're on this, like, cliffside vista road where they stop off and they're having this conversation about, you know, where they want to go for their honeymoon, what they want to do with themselves, and they have this moment and say, we have all the time in the world. And then the antagonist in the movie drives by, shoots up the car. Bond is fine, but she dies. She dies, and a cop shows up, and it's just this unbelievably gut punch moment where the cop is like kneeling down at the window to try and get him to move along on this like narrow road, and he's holding her in the car, saying it's all right. She's just very tired. We have all the time in the world. And then the Bond theme starts playing.
Da-da.
That's the end.
Whoa.
It is so fucking raw.
Guys,
an otherwise mediocre kind of movie. That hit hard. And they keep referencing the fact that he was married through other films. Like, it comes up again.
It does.
And again. And it should, because Jesus Christ, you can't just leave that alone.
Well, also, by the way, great mythos that, like, the one time we had a one-off James Bond and he gets married and it's early on and then something terrible happens and this man will never, never be married to anything other than the bottle again. Like,
yeah.
No, guys, I say the line, we have all the time in the world, a lot. No one ever knows what I'm referencing when I say that. People just assume I'm saying words. Guys, everything I say is a fucking reference.
Tom's always doing
it. Yep. there's nothing but the bit. You got to commit to the bit.
Oh, commit to the bit, bro. I can't believe Corey puts up with me. okay, Zach, again, it wouldn't get my vote, but it is a very actually good... If you're going to put a James Bond movie in this, that's a pretty fucking good answer, actually.
It's really the only one if you're going to just go off of only the James Bond movies.
Boring
the last
James.
Word, the last word is that GoldenEye is such a departure visually, thematically, like the filmography, everything from every prior Bond movie. It is so starkly different that if you told somebody to start watching the Bond franchise from GoldenEye, I don't think that they would really miss all that much.
And so that's where I started as a, you know, adolescent.
Child of the 90s
having
also,
now gone
N64,
like,
anyone?
Basically... Yeah, having now gone like basically back to back through the rest of the franchise to that point, there are ups and downs. There are some classic moments. It is kind of fun to see where a lot of the tropes come from, but it's almost more archaeology than it is entertainment. And at GoldenEye, it starts being entertainment.
So, Zach, I'm going to send you a link. Right before the pandemic, I had listened to a full podcast series. There's an online comedy group I like called Loading Ready Run. Trey, they're the ones who do Checkpoint. And two of their guys did a podcast series, because coming up to, what was the final No Time to Die? They were trying to time it where they were going to do every single movie and do like a, not a commentary track, but like a full like 2 hour podcast for each one all the way up to the movie. And so I listened to their whole series because it was just that entertaining. It was only partly comedic. It was mostly them just talking about production and behind the scenes. It was so entertaining. So I'll send you that link, Zach. And if you're really bored someday, start listening to that podcast series, but it's fucking awesome.
Right on.
All right, Trey, I think it's over to you.
You know, so going back to video games, indie hit from last year, year before, where you play as a cat. Stray.
Stray.
Stray. Stray. No, not Stray. The Wolf, not the Wolf's Rain soundtrack. Come on, guys. Nerds. Stray, you're a cat. You enter this game, you're thinking, okay, this is cute. I'm going to be a cat. I love being, you know, the idea of being a cat. I'm going to go fuck with people and be cute and annoying all at the same time and you know, do whatever I feel like, and you do for hours, and it's great, and then you form meaningful relationships, and then it all gets burned down around you, and then you get back to being a cat, and it's a, I don't know, I don't want to spoil too much more beyond that, but the game makes you feel things, and the ending forces you to care about a robot in a way that I didn't think I could. Especially not in the persona of a cat that doesn't even care about people stuff.
I cared about Scarlett Johansson and her, and she didn't even have a body.
Fair enough. All right. Sorry, robots are easier to love. In a lot of ways, they're a lot easier to love.
Also, if I may interject the following, Trey, if it'll load, you can do it.
Stray!
Oh, no. Oh, no. Is that enough bleach?
Oh, it's so
to
bad.
To cleanse that from my mind. This is the problem of spending your youth all night marathoning anime, is that you get traumatized by things.
Are you going to play, one of the things I want to talk about, there's some games that came out today, actually. Are you going to play Little Kitty Big City?
I hear about it. Tell me, why should I play this? What's good
about
it?
My understanding is that it's basically take Stray, but make the Untitled Goose Game version of it.
Ooh, yes.
Oh, right. Wait a second. This just came out?
I think today.
I thought this was out a while ago.
I mean, I could be wrong.
I remember hearing about this. No. It says initial release date 2024. Did I just like see a teaser trailer or something?
Well, yeah, because they had, you know, they were announcing it and shit.
I mean, all I have to say about that is honk, 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 honk.
Ah, so good.
May 9th. It is today. No, Trey, one of my favorite memes that always makes me actually get a little tear in my eye, in all honesty, is the template for the when the Reaper comes to get the dog. Was I a good boy? No. You were the best. Or I'm told you were the best. And then my favorite parody of that by far. By the way, I always use Death's voice from Discworld when I do Death, because it was voiced by Christopher fucking Lee, by the way. The Untitled Goose Game version of that is, you know, was I a good goose? No. And then it just shows the goose running away with the scythe and the little emote above it.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I almost put Untitled Goose Game on my list here because the ending is great.
It is great.
You realize that you're part of a loop. You're playing part of a loop where you've been fucking with these people for a while.
Right.
Like, this isn't your first go around, all right? You're like a pro status. You've been stealing their stupid town bell.
And
you've been jacking their pants.
And literally,
it's no problem for you.
That whole nest of
normal
things
Tuesday
right
night
out of
for
sight
Shia
on
LaBeouf.
The first frame. It's so good. You're like,
oh,
I
that's
was
right there,
here.
Yeah.
I started here.
It all comes back to where you began. You're like, oh, well, and the thing is, it validates the way that you're kind of supposed to interpret the game, which is like, I'm going to go be annoying. And you do. And then you realize that's what I've been doing probably for a long time.
All right. That is a good fucking nomination, as well as answer in general. Zach, did you think of one yet? Oh,
I mean, if I'm thinking of endings that, like, especially for video games, you get that moment where you finish the game and you just kind of have to sit in the dark for a minute. The last one that really did that for me was probably Horizon Zero Dawn.
Really?
I don't know if either of you have played that. It's an open world RPG, so yeah. I don't know how much that
I've
that
been nagged,
you, but...
and when I get nagged, I don't do things. So I didn't
know. All right, sell us on it.
I mean, the game itself is very fun. You know, it is an open world RPG, strong female protagonist, and you fight robot dinosaurs. Like, the premise on its face is pretty good, but the the story that you unravel over the course of the game is the story of the apocalypse, right? And how it came to be and what your particular connection to it is. The way the game ends, the way that first entry in this now franchise ends, is you have a climactic battle with a malevolent AI. And it is a very satisfying battle on its own. But after it's over, you have to confront the fact that you are in a world that could have been so much better.
And then you go to the Forbidden West and make it better. Maybe?
Well, no, not really. Well, maybe, kind of, sort of. I haven't finished Forbidden West yet, so I have no idea. But, I don't care if I spoil it for you at this
I'm
point.
I'm not going to play it.
Yeah,
no offense, it's not my type of game.
The apocalypse was rogue AI that was put into robots that consume biomass for fuel. And they got out of control, as they would.
Matrix.
Basically, it's sort of kind of gray goo a little bit. They caused the mass extinction of everything. So the only way to quote-unquote survive, nothing survived. But they set up another AI that had, call it empathy. And they gave it a bunch of subordinate functions, that they call them, which were themselves kind of like smart-ish, but much more primitive, and they're responsible for broad, but otherwise big, but narrowly defined roles, like repopulating the biosphere with plants, or managing ocean toxicity levels, or cleaning the atmosphere, and so on. One of those subordinate functions, it was called Apollo, was supposed to be the knowledge, information, and training database for cloned humans so that they could be educated in the ways of the old world. And this fucking dick, this combination Zuckerberg Elon Musk asshole,
oh shit,
this guy. who was responsible for the machine plague that wiped out humanity and everything else, didn't want that to be his legacy. So he destroyed the Apollo database. And although the biosphere did eventually become
habitable,
and humans were reintroduced, cloned humans were reintroduced to the world, they had no education, right? They had nothing to base their knowledge on. They were kind of self-organizing into primitive tribes. And so you have this neat, like, primitive setting with futuristic robots and AI, and it's
it's a
wonderful setting on its face. But the ending of that is you have to confront the fact that, yes, you saved the world, but it's a world that wasn't supposed to be like this.
That's okay. Good.
But this sort of post-singularity thing reminds me of Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect. If you all haven't read that, it's one of my favorite internet novels / smut things about the singularity. And I highly recommend it. Again, another great ending to the same concepts of, like, well, you know, what happens when we build tools and machines that run amok and well beyond our control, and somehow bits of us survive that? Are we still us? What is now? What are we doing with it? This is interesting. I wish that they put that on the back of the box. We probably would have actually played the game.
Instead of making what's awesome about it a twist at the end. God damn it!
Well, you discover a lot of that just kind of as you go, and so you're slowly building up context, right? And you know a lot of what's going on, but you have the immediate problem of this. One of the subordinate functions was resetting the biosphere if it was deemed to be unstable. Basically, hard reset. And it was triggered erroneously to start resetting this last biosphere, but there would not be the resources for another attempt afterward. So you have to stop it. And so you've got this immediate threat, and you're literally, like, chasing around the world trying to get this thing cornered so that you can kill it. Big battle, everybody fights, a lot of people die, you ultimately win, but then you still have to. That's really the only point where you get to take the breath and say, "Oh shit, now I get to think about the implications."
Mm.
It's very, very fun.
All right, reminds me a bit also of the ending to Cyberpunk. Again, I haven't played any of the since the game's been updated, but if you did the Nomad ending, which is what I did, the whole press F to breathe freely thing, which is like, it killed me. I just broke.
It was so much better than Pay Respects.
I was all over here busy trying to like beat the big bad and free the people that I cared about and escape into the desert with this one chick that I wanted to bang. And then they're like, and now you can breathe. And I'm like, I hadn't done that for the last 5 hours, actually. Thank you for reminding me.
Fucking Cyberpunk. A game I should try, and I don't know that I ever will. But Zach, did you finally play the expansion yet?
I haven't. Oh, I haven't had time.
Slacker.
There's been so many other things.
So much slacking.
Do you want to play Cyberpunk? Do you want me to play Balatro? Yeah,
Balatro.
That's what I thought.
Once you start, you can't. It's like you pop the fun, don't stop.
It is the poster child, in my opinion. It's the poster child of emergent complexity. It gives you all of the mechanics. Your first run, they all seem so simple, and then you start realizing what happens when you use them all in concert and together. And all of the game's challenge modes are not introducing a new thing to you. It's just being like, and we're going to turn this number up or down. And you're like, God fucking damn it. Blotcher. Okay, let's move on. So I have two video games on my list. We'll only do one of them because I've been beating the shit out of that dead horse that is Something Wild. So we're not going to talk about that one.
Yeah, that was on my list too, but we're not going to talk
about
that.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to go all the way back to the year of our Lord, I think it was 1995, 1994. Trey, which JRPG stuck the landing?
Chrono Trigger?
God fucking right it did.
Of course it was Chrono Trigger. It's always Chrono Trigger.
But the world refused to change, and that's not really anything you've done about it, probably.
It is...
Hey, tell us about the trial again, Tom.
Oh, it's so good. So I took that sandwich and I ate that shit, and it was delicious. Also, that kitty, I did not return that kitty. It was too cute. I wanted to steal the kitty. but it's just so good. It's so hard for any time travel story to stick a landing. And so the few that do, Outer Wilds included, are fucking phenomenal. And the thing about Chrono Trigger is that it balances. I have a whole book over here about the design doc of Chrono Trigger and how it subverts your expectations by having different power curves where you think, again, Magus is going to be the big bad and then he's not. But then there's all these different eras and times that tie together, the origin of life being tied to Lavos. And somehow they do all of this with all the characters and tie it all together. And it works in a 1990s RPG where they had text limitations. Like, look, I love Final Fantasy VI. And Final Fantasy VI ending is actually really good. It doesn't hold a fucking candle to Chrono Trigger. Still a masterpiece to this day, in my opinion.
I have to agree. I'm probably, if we're looking into the what caused this to be so good, you look at something where you're like, okay, we've a known technology that's already well mature, right? 2D JRPGs, they've been around for 15 years at that point, and teams that are mature, and it's like Casablanca, right? It's good because like it's the apogee, the end state of a system developed to create a great thing, and the right people were in the right room at the right time.
The dream team, literally.
Literally the dream team, right? Yeah, they're given a limited budget, and they just go on and they make a thing that's just like, yep, and here's what we've all been trying to do for a while, but everyone else did it bad, iterating to success. It's incredible. Part of what makes it work so well is like it starts, like all JRPGs, they're very linear, right? You've ever played a Final Fantasy game, you're familiar with this. Like you're watching a movie, you're either grinding rats in a hallway or you're watching a movie about guys going down the hallway and doing the thing or probably having the girlfriend stolen, and now you gotta watch Knights of the Round for the 15th time anyway. It starts like that, but it keeps making like, and what do you want to do, man? Actually it's not really that linear, and one of the big what's the right word, story beats is that at the end, as you're entering what we call the end game in the modern parlance, all of a sudden the story goes fully non-linear, and you can just do like these, there's like four or five different entire plot threads you could just go do, which again, this predates anything resembling an RPG like that, right?
Yep.
The whole MMO concept of like we have quest subs or whatever, it's like, oh no, actually, you have a time machine. What am I worried about time? I have all the time in the world, right?
Right.
And
oh,
and you kind of the mechanics reveal this to you, which is an incredible thing to do. Again, very, very non-typical for those kinds of games, but these guys were so good they could break the rules, and that's what real artistry is, honestly.
Yep. Quick shout out. Because I listened to too many stupid gaming podcasts, and someone pointed out Akira Toriyama, rest in peace, was the concept artist for this game. And someone pointed out, we all think about Akira Toriyama's characters because we think about Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Quest and that. But actually, the thing that he was truly fucking remarkable at wasn't the characters. Yes, we all know his facial styles and finite sets of hair and eyes. But specifically, what was really amazing that he was really good at was actually look at his backgrounds and his background characters and his creatures and his things. How else can you make a dinosaur and a robot and a kitty and like an evil demon all look like they exist together seamlessly in the same universe? Chrono Trigger is a great example of how Akira Toriyama's art actually, his true strength wasn't just in characters, it was actually in everything else.
Interesting.
Absolute badass. Okay, so Chrono Trigger, couldn't get away with not talking about that. I got a couple more. I'll do one or two more after this. Trey, you got another one?
Let's see here. Let me pull up the old list. We've already gone over most of these. We can't have one of these podcasts without mentioning Blade Runner and the Tears in the Rain speech, but that's all we have to say about it, I think, really.
Which ending's the best, though?
Well, it doesn't matter because all of them include the Tears in the Rain speech. That's the ending. That's true. The fucking ending. The rest of it is a matter of what epilogue do you prefer?
By the way, apparently Rutger Hauer was the one who had the idea of having him hold a dove the whole time in his hand so that when he died, the dove got released. Apparently that was a Rutger Hauer improvisation on set.
He was given a huge amount of dialogue as well and just whittled it down to okay, let's get rid of most of the sci-fi stuff, but just hint at some of the good bits. And
attack ships on fire off the shores of Orion.
Right?
Of Orion. Sure.
Sorry, shut up. Go back to not participating.
Sea beams, Tenhauer Gate, et cetera, et cetera. That's what happens whenever you let people who are, creative people do their thing. I'm looking at you, George Lucas. We just recently rewatched the Plinkett reviews, and I'm salty all over again.
So good.
So anyway, that had to be brought up. The other thing I had on my list actually was Home Alone.
Really?
And the reason for this is that it's...
Sell me on this.
Everyone always thinks about the trap scene and they're fun. I mean, quite frankly, if we were all children with BB guns at one point and we all thought we could just murder the shit out of some grown-ups, and he damn well does.
Joe Pesci Daniel Stern.
Oh, God, they're both so good in this. Daniel Stern's facial expressions. So, worth the price of admission. But the emotional catharsis comes though because his mom fucking gets home because she's been spending the last 40 hours hanging out in the back of a U-Haul with John Candy. Dealing with his nonsense just because she's gonna try and be there, and so ultimately the sort of the notion of you may not like your parents, you may not like your siblings, but they love you anyway, and even though you're a little shit fucker.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's something about that resonates with literally everybody, and it works. It brings it back down to reality. So they just ended with him fitting these guys off. It would have been that was a weird movie. I don't know how I feel about that. Instead
but
of being
you left out the whole old man who shovels snow.
Oh, no. When he sort of murders those fools with the shovel, that's amazing. Yeah, no, that happens too. I think he's sort of supposed to be the boatman on the River Styx, right? To bring you back. All right.
Oh, wow. And you put it that way. Now you're selling me. Now you're selling me.
Here's reality. Yes. I hope you enjoyed your time being your own person. But it's a great way of taking a story from being completely fanciful and ridiculous and grounding it pretty quickly too. Hard to pull that off. And sort of story beats per time left over in the film.
You're doing a really good job selling this. It certainly would not have been on my list, but you're doing a really good job fucking selling it, actually. Mm-hmm. Bravo, sir. So,
all right. You prompted me, and I had to think about things. I had a couple of martinis, and that's what I came up with.
Shaken, not stirred.
Oh, man. shit, I was going to say something, and I forgot what it was. Crap.
You had two things on your list, you said.
But I was going to say something about the Home Alone ending. If it's such a good movie, explain to me this. What does not Calvin. The fuck's his name? Main character, Home Alone.
Kevin.
Kevin. Kevin. Thank you. What does Kevin's father do for work?
Oh man, he is loaded. That fool. Right? He's a software engineer. I know what he does for work. He does my job.
He works for Northrop Grumman.
Oh, yeah.
Not just a software engineer. He's a defense contractor in the 80s.
Defense. Yeah. Right. No. The fact that they can bail on like first class tickets to Paris is amazing to me.
All right, I've got two more. One I'll do quick, and then the other one is you're both gonna like roll your eyes, but probably agree. Zach, do you got anything? I want to give you a chance.
I mean, I could probably come up with something. I could say something like Portal 2 had a really satisfying ending, but that's kind of obvious. So is The Sixth Sense.
Hey, that was one of the two on my list. I hate giving credit to Shyamalan because I think he sucks as a filmmaker and has not advanced to the movie. But that ending was worth its accolades.
Do you remember how much fun it was when that movie came out?
Yes.
When people were talking about it and being like, "Oh, I don't want to give anything away. Did you pick up on the red clue? I'm not going to tell you any more than that." Oh man, just absolutely a blast. And it was like story-wise a really good round out twisty ending. What a twist,
right?
It's like the only really good
it's the only good Shyamalan ending. Fuck every other one of those guys.
So this ending only works, these kind of films only worked in the pre-internet era, because things like this are inherently spoiled because of assholes like me and you and all of our friends always talking about things, right? Exactly, right? Yeah, Dumbledore and all this. The problem is that that you can't keep things a secret anymore. But I still remember riding along in my uncle's truck, and some asshole on AM radio comes in and spoils the ending.
Oh, really?
And he hadn't seen it yet.
Fucking
And I remember
really?
Him like spewing his coffee and being like, "What the fuck?" It was amazing.
that's so fucking awesome, dude.
What? Bruce Willis was dead the whole time? That's bullshit. Like, it's fucking anyway, great. Sorry.
By the way, because we said we wouldn't talk about the Outer Wilds, I'm going to say one thing, which is I still lurk the Outer Wilds subreddit all the time. I absolutely love it. That is one of the most genuinely lovely online communities you will ever find, because they all refuse to spoil anything for each other. They use the spoiler tags. They use the hidden spoiler blocks. That community is so wonderful. Whenever someone comes on and puts a post of, "I'm going to play for the first time, what should I do?" And they're like, "Talk to no one." So wonderful.
You should unsubscribe from us and unplug your router and go play that game until you're done.
Go into a dark hole and talk to no one.
It's true. All right. Well, Zach, awesome. You said that was the one I was going to finish with, actually, because, again, as cliche as it is, I think it's worth pointing it out.
It is.
It's good. It's really, really good. I think it was worth – there's a reason we still talk about it today, like Shyamalan or not. Okay, the other one I wanted to give here was, for some reason, when Corey and I were talking about this subject, one of the shows I think had so many amazingly wonderful endings in it was The X-Files. When The X-Files was in its prime, it was a fucking great show. And so I was thinking about it, and I was like, okay, I did want to mention an X-Files episode. One of my favorite episodes of all time, because it is so weird, it is a Rashomon, it's the Rashomon episode, where you're hearing the stories from everyone else's point of view, because an author is writing a book about this. It's called Jose Chung's From Outer Space, and it is a great episode that you kind of have to have watched the series to appreciate, because you have all the characters, but they're kind of acting a little bit out of context, as again the Rashomon stories are all being told from different vantage points. They have bring on this extra side cast, and it all wraps up really nice at the end. It's ambiguous but neat, but ties all of the elements together. So again, this is probably just an honorable mention, but if you like the X-Files, if you remember the X-Files, go watch Jose Chung's From Outer Space. It's fucking legit.
I'll give you one more honorable mention.
Do
it. Just going to include single episodes.
Bring it on.
The Inner Light, Next Generation.
Oh yeah. It's good.
When they have him playing the flute in his quarters at the end of the episode, and they zoom out of the ship, and you just hear the flute notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The feels, man.
No, look,
anyway.
No, I love Star Trek, and I thought about, could I put like DS9 or something else on here? And look, I fucking love Star Trek. There's no secret about that. But they're not actually one of the things. One of the huge problems of Star Trek was that season three TNG ends on the series first cliffhanger with Best of Both Worlds Part One. But this became a tradition where they didn't know the series was going to be renewed, so they didn't actually have a part two written. They ended on a cliffhanger and had no fucking idea how they were going to resolve it. And that became a tradition for the show. They would end on a cliffhanger and not know how to resolve it until they wrote it the second time. And so many of Star Trek's endings aren't great, actually. Like, the episodes are great. Some of the endings are good. But there's a lot of not greatness. I think, you know, Zach, you say this, man. Maybe just All Good Things alone should have been on that fucking list. But
I mean, yeah, I loved All Good Things, but, you know, and as far as Star Trek series go, I think that's my favorite, like, series ending.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, there are individual episodes that hit that benchmark, I think. The Inner Light is the one that springs to mind most readily. I'm trying to think of another really good one.
One of my favorite endings in TNG is the episode The Most Toys, where Data, they fake blowing up so they can put him in a thing. And so in the end, I think it's Paul Rubens is the guest star, fucking phenomenal on the episode. In the end, he's in the brig, he's going to get sent off to jail, and Data goes to talk to him. And the final line of the episode is like, oh, I bet it brings you a lot of joy to see me like this, trapped behind a cage. And Data just looks at me and goes, no, sir, it does not. I'm an android. I do not feel joy. And he just turns around and walks out. Great ending. Great. I don't know why that one always stuck with me.
Some of the Data episodes are really good. I liked I can't remember the name of it, but the one where he's basically on trial because they want to take him apart.
The Measure of a Man, one of the best.
The Measure
TNG
of a Man,
episodes.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it. Riker has to be the opposing counsel. He has to argue that Data is not a living, thinking, sentient creature. It should be treated as property and disassembled, and doesn't want to do it, but does as well as he possibly can, and feels so bad about it. So bad that Data has to be the one to comfort him, and just it's good because Data's not a warm character. He's not meant to be, but he is the thinking part of any emotional situation. If you can think your way through it, that's what Data does by nature. And he brings up a really good point. Like, if you didn't do this job, somebody else would have had to. If they hadn't done as well, this might still be an open question.
No, it's the whole defense lawyer thing, right? Like, your job is to make sure that the other guy does their job in terms of the case.
And the quote is, in doing so, you saved me, but that wounded you. And Riker, what's the ending quote, Riker? Mr. Data, you're a wise man. Was it like, you know, no, sir, but with your help, I am learning. Oh, God, it's a great ending. It's a great ending, Zach. Let's just talk about Star Trek endings.
To be honest, the prior example about, Data being all like, I don't think about you at all. It's a very Don Draper kind of thing.
Or an M. Bison type thing. For me.
Right. For me, it was a Tuesday.
if we did premises, I am really... There's not very many good things that I could say about Picard, but the one really good thing is that they initiated the series with a reflection on Data. Mm-hmm. And that was the best possible way to do that. Like, sure, it went kind of off the rails and it's weird in spaces. And yeah, there's a lot of fan service, especially in season three, which I don't hate. I'm just saying. No! But like... The dream where they're playing poker so good. Data was such a great character for Next Gen.
And the time they broke the time loop because they sent sent information back into Data's head through the time loop and he kept intentionally shuffling threes into the poker deck. I think we should move on to news now.
That sounds like a new Balastro Joker, really, Data. Over here just throwing threes in your deck.
All right, let's get to the news. Oh, I had to fuck with you. Okay, cool. We actually, Zach, we have loaded up the fucking news channel. Actually, we had like nothing last week, and we are locked stocked this week. Let me scroll the fuck up. Okay, let's. Jesus Christ, I'm still scrolling.
Oh man, I guess I reposted your Michelle Yeoh and Blade Runner 2099 series.
Well, go ahead. And
I
talk
scrolled
about it.
Up. I scrolled up a bunch to make sure that I wasn't double posting, and I didn't see it. So. I tried. Anyway, yeah, no, Michelle Yeoh. I like that in the article they're like, Michelle Yeoh of Star Trek Discovery.
I know, right? Not her Oscar win or anything, just Star Trek Discovery. Fine.
No,
this
just
fine.
Literally anything else that she's ever done. But yeah, no, she's going to be in the Prime Video Blade Runner 2099 series. Oh, I guess you had a different article.
Is it a series? Yours was IGN. A series or movie?
It's a series. Blade Runner 2099 series.
Huh, I did not realize that. Yeah, I think Michelle Yeoh's awesome. I'll watch anything she's in.
I'm going to watch anything that she's in. Yeah.
Can they do Blade Runner justice? Oh god, that's going to be hard. Honestly though, doing a show I think gives them a lot more room to breathe. Maybe they actually could do something cool in that. It's a different format than they've done before.
It feels like that's what they really wanted to do with the movies. Like, there are enough acts. Is there a better word than acts? They jump around enough. It seems like it would be better served as a series.
Sure. I mean, like, so the films, the original, the source novel, they're all texture based. It's all textural, and that works well for a TV show. Quite frankly, you've got a lot of time to go and chew the scenery and explore the texture of the world that you're talking about, and the, you know, you can bring themes in. It's not necessarily a character driven thing, and so I think that actually makes good prime fodder for episodic material.
Well, and what's great is that you get the choice now. With streaming and the way things are, between doing a 2-hour movie or a 10-hour movie.
Fair enough, yeah.
Blade Runner feels like it needs to be a 10-hour movie. I just...
Well, I mean, you know, Fallout worked so well, and I think that in the same way, you have something that's very textural that you can just explore this world, and you don't really need to be tied to any, like, you're not over here following Luke Skywalker or whatever, some tentpole characters. And so, please, let's get some more. Let's get some of this.
Most nepotistic franchise ever. Well, yeah, so this is pretty cool. When does it have even a theoretical release date, a scheduled date? No, nothing.
I have no idea.
Yeah, no, nothing. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it gets off the ground. We'll see if it gets made. But it could be cool. Could be cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Not opposed to it.
Let's see here. Okay, let's get some of the sad bullshit out of the way. So Microsoft closed a whole bunch of studios. The game industry continues to be. Square Enix actually did a bunch of cancellations as well behind the scenes. But that somehow I think they timed it right after Microsoft to get like to take some cover behind them. So Microsoft closed like four, I think, different development studios. And one of the crazy ones was that you guys heard of the game Hi-Fi Rush?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indie darling from last year. Super well reviewed. Actually fairly successful for being the type of game and size of the game that it was. People are, of course, digging up tweets from Xbox executives going, exceeded our expectations, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that was last year. Huge success. They're shut down. It's like, what the fuck? So the games industry just continues to get its fucking ass kicked. And I don't know, guys. It's fucking sad. I'm pretty sad about it. Let's see. Redfall developers also shut down. Who else? More cuts at Bethesda.
I feel so bad for Redfall. Everything about it was set up to fail.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. No, it's not a good time.
Oh, the guys who did the Elder Scrolls Online are
gone
now.
To be fair, that game was pretty bad. But Bethesda, yeah. I mean, like they're back in the limelight. You know, Fallout being a hit series on Netflix. I'm surprised that they're not over here staffing up to try and like get back in at another game. But no.
All I need from them is the Elder Scrolls 6.
Oh, I need less than that. But yeah, that too. I'd continue to be that as well. I mean,
Bethesda's in a tough spot though, right? Because like. Especially now with Fallout being as successful as it is, they have to actually do something that comes close to or topping Fallout or an Elder Scrolls has been in development for over a decade, right? Like, it's going to be so hard. Their expectations are so fucking high. I don't know, man. I got to tell you again, from my experience in the industry, like, you keep raising that. The bar doesn't raise linear. It raises exponential from sure. expectations, from development costs. It's so hard.
There's such a good, easy solution to that, though, for Bethesda.
Use AI to generate your game?
No, it's to give Fallout to Obsidian.
Yeah, the guys that actually made the thing in the first fucking place.
The guys that did it good. They made New Vegas, arguably the best Fallout game of the series, or at least the first-person series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
it's also really funny to see the like schism in Fallout fandom, with like everybody who liked Fallout 3 and 4, or like the Bethesda or produced titles versus New Vegas on the Obsidian side, and they're just like, it's very divisive.
It is. It is. You know, again, I've enjoyed all of the FPS Fallout games, but Vegas is head and shoulders above the others.
It's so much better.
Really wanted to love 4, and it wasn't even close, because Obsidian knows how to make a system. They're using
Preston.
Every single side quest is exciting. I'm never over here having to build a stupid village that I don't care about for people that I'm not invested in, right?
Nope. Anyway, yeah, no. It's also been funny to watch, what's his name? Todd Howard get harassed about the ending to the Fallout TV show where they show New Vegas in the Stinger, right? And it's just like, oh, Todd Howard, how are you feel about New Vegas? Oh, you're getting dunked on. He's like, New Vegas has always been important to this series, guys. I don't know what you want from me.
And it's canon.
And it's canon. Like, I don't know how more into New Vegas I can possibly be for you.
Yeah, no, I was so hyped when I saw that. And my wife had no idea what the hell I was so excited about. I was like, she's like, this is a city, I guess. Where is this place? I'm like,
all right.
It's Vegas. There's Mr. House. House. I'm going to the house.
Hold on. I gotta move a dog off a couch before he jumps. One sec.
Old man's gonna break a hip.
I know, right? we have stairs for our cats all over the house now, and I'm like, but your cats, but you're so old.
You're so old. There's this, apparently a lot of cats are hard limited by, like kidney disease. And so there's this new shot out of Japan that goes a long way to eliminating kidney disease in cats, and apparently has pushed feline domesticus lifespans up into the 40s.
Oh, that's a bad thing, though.
That seems so awful. No. Like, have you seen a 25-year-old cat?
Also,
that thing
is
hanging on by its toenails. Absolutely,
I mean, look, guys,
wrecked.
We as humans are great at putting different species to extinction. Cats have definitely beat us at that. They put more other species to extinction than we would ever dream of. Helping them stay alive longer is their plan, not ours.
They
counterpoint
us.
Counterpoint, Trey, cat girls.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I like that too.
Trade-offs, really.
No, this conversation just came up recently about the, you know, like, would you want to live forever if you could? And I'm sorry, I always think of Gulliver's Travels. And I always have to look up this name every time. The Struldbergs, the island of immortals, where these fuckers live forever, but they still age. So they just become these decrepit old, you know, husks of people.
Oh, no.
Yeah, freaking, that's what I think about whenever someone says, oh, but you could be immortal. I'm like, oh, that's a curse. That's a curse. Don't fucking do it.
Yeah, you don't want that. No one wants that. I promise you. Even if it could be like all your wishes come true. Again, I'm gonna cite Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect on this one. Premise of the whole thing: AI becomes, you know, singularity sentient, controls the universe. At one point, the AI rasterizes the universe because it's easier to, vectorizes it. It's like, I don't need to track all the pixels. We can just use lines and math, without anyone's consent, of course. And everyone can live forever and can be whatever they want to be and live whatever they want, lives they want. And it's terrible. They just hate it. Ultimately, it comes down to, after thousands and thousands of years, the people are getting by with their blood sport and their, you know, whatever gets their jollies off at this point. I'm like, yep, that's 2024. I got it.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, I want to do a couple of headlines here that talk about our Disney overlords. So, gentlemen, I'm actually a little bit excited for the first time in a long time. I'm actually excited for a Marvel movie. I am looking forward to the third Deadpool movie. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's finally actually using the multiverse to, you know, have fucking fun. Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman together. Look, man, I ain't going to fucking complain. So I'm looking forward to it. So something really funny, though, happened. Obviously, they're doing press interviews and junkets and shit. And Hugh Jackman, I guess, told the story of Kevin Feige said, dude, don't come back. You had, like, the best ending with Logan. Don't do it. And so apparently Hugh Jackman was, like, driving in his car, like, just thinking, like, do I want to do this? Should I come back? And apparently he just made the decision himself, like, you know what? That's what I want to do it. I'm going to go have fun. So he called up Ryan Reynolds, and literally, because Ryan Reynolds, the fucking literal billionaire, was, like, in charge of everything. He's like, Ryan, I'll do it if you'll have me. I'm like, oh my God, that's like actually kind of fucking wholesome.
It is. And contrast that with one of my favorite TikToks of all time. This guy comes up and he's like, tell me about something that normal people don't care about, but movies get wrong and it drives you crazy. Cut to Ryan Reynolds looking into the camera, stone-faced, and he just says, Hugh Jackman.
Yep, you made me play that on the last podcast, you bastard. I'm actually trying to find the link, and I can't
Hugh
find
Jackman.
It.
Hugh Jackman. Something movies get wrong that bothers you. they're fun.
Oh,
anyway.
Play, you bastard.
What's something that movies get wrong that drives you crazy, but other people don't care about at all?
Hugh Jackman.
There you go.
Absolutely hilarious to me. Apparently just to me.
No, it's good.
It's fucking funny. In other Marvel news, I guess Marvel has finally, or Disney has decided that from now on, there will only be two or three movies per year and two TV shows per year for Marvel. And I'm still like, guys, that's a ridiculous amount of content. I would have been okay if you said one or two of both put together.
Yeah, like, that's like me being all like, I'm only going to do this much cocaine every night. Like, what?
Trey, just say no to drugs. Maybe you should save the rest of me for later. No.
Drugs are expensive, man. No.
Okay, last thing isn't actually about Marvel. It's about Hugh Jackman himself. So apparently, and okay, Russell Crowe already took a stab at this, so I don't know how this is going to go for Jackman. A Wolverine star, Hugh Jackman, will play a battle-worn Robin Hood grappling with his life of crime.
No. Oh no!
I don't know what to think about.
Robin Hood with depression and regret.
Men of Nopes.
White boy, Australian. Crikey.
Oh, don't do it.
Men in denial.
Right.
Men
in denial. Oh god damn it, that was good. Yeah. So,
is there anything? Is there any reason to tell that story again? I ask. I posit this this question. There's no reason to revisit this.
No,
let's not.
It was told perfectly by Kevin Costner.
Men in tight moral spaces. oh no.
Oh. Okay. What other headlines are here? Okay. We'll sprinkle in the sad headline. Sad headline. Zach, this actor from the Lord of the Rings trilogy, very recently passed away.
Oh, yeah, that was Bernard Hill, right?
Oh, you remember the name? Yeah, I only knew him by King Theoden.
Yep. He's gone to be with his ancestors, his forebears.
There you go. Yeah, I guess I didn't actually click in. I guess some of the Lord of the Rings actors did pay tribute to him. And appreciated him, but yep, there you go. Sad news. Rest in peace, Bernard Hill. Okay. In other news, equally depressing, Riddick Furia officially in production with Vin Diesel reprising his iconic role. We're getting a Riddick movie with a. How fucking old is Vin Diesel? Jesus Christ.
Well, he doesn't age.
Yeah, exactly right. He's fully petrified. I'm not sure that's a problem. Mostly it's a problem of like what are they going to tell us? What story is going to happen? Like is anyone with some creative talent backing this thing?
No, God fucking Christ, no. Oh,
was anybody mind. Ever?
Hey! For the record, I actually like Pitch Black, the first movie.
Yeah, Pitch Black was good.
Yeah, those
everything
kids, those kids
was...
in the desert came up with a movie, and it was great.
And it had Claudia Black, who Man, she should have been a fucking rock star. Claudia why Black wasn't she? So badass.
Why wasn't she an A-lister? I don't understand.
I don't know either. She should have been. Like, the definition of fucking badass chick. Like, her and Michelle Yeoh, man. Oh. Okay, I think one other movie headline here. James Gunn shares first look at David Cornersweats? I don't know how to pronounce his names. Superman. And he's literally lacing up his boot. I don't care. I don't know why people are so excited about seeing
him. He looks like he gets really annoyed at having to go to work.
Yeah. It does. Now he's got the hair curl, and the suit isn't one of those like form-fitting Ziploc bag things. So, you know,
he's just kind of
a dude.
It sure is a picture. I don't understand why people are losing their shit over this. Like, he sure looks like Superman.
He sure does.
And, like, I don't understand. Yes. I don't know, man. I'm just not very excited about, I don't know, a lot of the superhero stuff these days. James Gunn's amazing. Maybe he'll do great things with the DCEU version 2.0. I don't fucking care. Maybe it'll be great. I don't understand why people have hype right now. Like, what has anyone done to give you hype right now? Like, just wait it out, folks.
It's hard to be excited about Superman as a character. He's just not that exciting.
I mean, I don't think so. People do defend him quite a bit, and I don't know. I'm like you, man. I just don't see it, but...
I mean, the last time I cared about Superman was that monologue at the end of Kill Bill Part 2. I was like, oh, yeah. You know, I never thought about that. You're right, David Carradine.
Really? I'm still hung up on the... it's not Clerks. Mallrats, where... what's his name? Jason, what's his name? Is like, you know, the only person Superman could have a sex with is Wonder Woman. Like, imagine him shooting off his sperm, be like a shotgun blast and kill Lois Lane. Oh, man.
Oh, no.
First world problems.
Death by snoo-snoo.
Okay, last set of news headlines. There's just so much to talk about. Hades motherfucking 2 goes into early access. Trey, you've got to be excited about this.
The only thing that I'm nervous about is the music going to be as good? Like, because damn, that music was really good. I got the LPs, you know.
Zach, I don't actually know your history with Hades. Did you play Hades?
I mean, no, not really.
God damn it.
I watched a lot of other people play Hades.
Yeah. Well,
I was peripherally aware of Hades.
It is a phenomenal, like, it's not even like my type of game. Like, it's an action, not hack and slash, but I don't know. It's an awesome game. I love the Greek mythology stuff in it. It's so unbelievably well told.
Isn't it a roguelite?
It is.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's my type of game.
That's absolutely your game.
Yes, but it's combat. It's fast paced. Not as much mine, but like, it is phenomenal. Yes. That is how fucking amazing
the
fucking game is.
Tom's not part of the.
Maybe 2 will have some deck building.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Yeah, because he's not part of the Elden Ring.
It's just
going to
be straight up Tom bait.
They'll have a pixel art mode you can put it into. It'll just have a shader that turns everything to pixels. Trey, say whatever you're going to say. Save me from this.
Oh, just that I'm pumped. That's going to be great. The original game was like the best exploration of daddy issues I've ever seen, ever, in the history of games. And everything about the environment, the way that the story teased itself out in this great, like, non-linear way. The fundamental 8-second combat loop is just really satisfying
So
and every time you lose, you've got like your uncles and aunts like being like, oh, I thought you would be better than this. Your dad's all disappointed in you, and you're like, whatever, dad, I'm going back to my room. And you go back to your room and you sulk like a fucking kid, and it's great.
And sharpen your knives.
That's right.
And can we acknowledge for a second the voice acting in that game? Holy shit. The Greek pantheon never sounded sexier. Oh my god!
Oh no, I every single person in that cast, I would absolutely fuck. See, it's a wonderful game, wonderful game.
Oh man, So I wanted to point out here that it has never been a better time, Zach, than to get Hades 1 because it's on sale for like 60% off or something. It's like $10. Just go fucking buy it. It is a beautiful fucking game. And here's what's crazy: Hades 2 has already blown Hades 1 concurrency out of the water. Hades 2 has been, and this is the early access just released, I guess it's peaking at like 86,000 people, and the original Hades over here peaked at like 40,000 concurrent people. So it's like, it's made the sales charts for the original Hades blow up, it's made the concurrency charts blow up. people are, and I think rightfully so, excited about this fucking game. So, yeah, Zach, fuck it. I'm just going to gift it to you when I get back to my goddamn desk.
I'm pretty sure I already own it.
Goddamn better.
If that helps.
Buy him a second one.
Let's see. Hang on. Oh, I actually don't, but I will go buy it.
Drive to your house and make you play it.
It's just right. It's
a ruler on my fingers.
All right.
Good times.
All right. This has been a long episode. We have got to do a trailer. Let's see here. Do you want an Adam Driver movie, a Nick Frost movie, or a Jack Quaid television show?
Jack Quaid?
All right.
I'm more curious about Jack Quaid.
Yeah. Please, we have to know. God.
Oh wait, hold on. I gotta
do AC.
We're taking it off, you know.
I gotta do the trailer bumper.
I wish I had more fingers. I hope you can see this. I'm doing it as hard as I can.
Well, dear listener, I'm glad this is a visual medium. Why the fuck is everyone getting naked? What is going on?
Fucking Moon and Nights.
It's naked o'clock, Tom. Come on.
I took off my sweater because I don't have AC. Trey took off his because he's susceptible to peer pressure.
Yeah, I am.
Just highly suggestible over here. I love it. I love that. Never change.
I won't.
All right. Zach, tell dear listener what we're about to watch.
Let's see. This is The Boys - Season 4 Official Trailer Pipe Prime Video.
So I watched the first two seasons of The Boys and thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't actually watch season 3. Not for any particular reason. I just didn't ever get around to it.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch The Boys?
I mean, I've seen some Boys, but not this one.
I'm right there with you. Like, I watched the first two seasons and I didn't catch the third. I don't know. Like, The Boys is a mood, and I just haven't been in a Boys mood.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, here is season 4. Oh, let me set the volume to something reasonable. All right, let's go. Carl Urban is so badass.
I look back at my life, and all I see are the messes I made.
I mean, Dredd solidified that a long time ago.
Oh, God, why the fuck didn't we get another Dredd movie? God damn it, it's so good.
I can do one thing right.
Homelander has a Vulcan for a child.
I can't do it alone.
I do like the cast of The Boys. It is a solid cast of characters.
It's corrupt beyond repair.
And Homelander is, whew, what a character.
It's not going to be easy. We'll have to do some terrible things.
For the greater good.
You'll no longer be beloved celebrities. You will be wrathful gods.
Oh, wow. Wow, this looks like it's going to go someplace even darker than normal.
That doesn't sound good, Ashley.
Oh, yeah, no shit, Ashley.
Sorry, Ashley.
The whole world is about to burn.
I gotta admit, I do. This is making me interested in watching season 4. Rounding us up and dumping us off. Is that John fucking Hamm?
Wait. Found the answer to all our prayers. A virus that kills soups.
This oh man, some R poppy material.
Desperate, even for you.
Well, insanely desperate's where we are, don't you think, love?
Let's go. Chop chop, motherfuckers.
I love Frenchie.
This is a biblical war of good versus.
God, one of the funniest moments in like the first season was just all of you are fucking up. Except you, Black Noir. You're good.
Yep.
Shoot the chicken?
This is fucking happening. Was it Zelda?
Again?
Look, we've all done bad shit.
Yeah, you start messing with the cuckoos, they mess with you.
To every problem is murder. Violence isn't brave.
Violence is power.
That's a spirit champ.
Who wants a creamy, delicious milkshake?
Oh God, his milk obsession is just so
weird, right.
Oh,
what the fuck? Okay, I confess, this trailer is making me really want to watch this goddamn season. Welcome. It looks
don't hate
all
it.
Right, all right, fine. Final get cut out.
Right?
You sold me on it.
Ah, shit. It sold me. It fucking sold me. God damn
oh,
it.
No. Am I highly suggestible?
All right, Trey. What song are we going out on?
We're going to go out on Hades, Good Riddance. You know, the one with Eurydice. Hopefully.
All right. Okay, dear listener, thank you so very much for joining us. Please remember that all views and opinions expressed in the podcast representative solely of the person expressing them, not of their friends, family, co-workers, or co-workers, necessarily not employers, past, present, or future. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for respecting our individuality. Trey, good pick of music here. What's the name? The name of the muse? What's her name? Damn it,
Eurydice.
Huh?
Eurydice.
Eurydice. Okay. Yeah. Orpheus's love. Oh man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Greek mythology kicks so much ass.
Well, it turns out that like the stories that were the origin for all the stories that you know are oddly familiar to you.
it's the hero's journey. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
It's like oh god.
Oh man. All right. Well,
you've
hey,
gone too far in a few places.
But it was stylistically designed to be like that. We can only diminish its effects.
Stop.
It's gonna be great. It's gonna be great.
It's gonna be great.
It's gonna be great.
It's gonna be great.
All right, Trey. Thank you so much for joining us, man. Zach, you get the participation award.
Yay!
Thanks for having me.
Give me trophy, please.
Oh, fucking so much fun as always, guys. And until next time, dear listener. Q in hell with Hades.
That's it. I'm getting out of here.